cooling down, relieving stress from the weekend. It's always stress for me.
Not just us, because we're able to talk about it, but we have our fans at home who can hear our opinions.
Cool. Cool down.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the
cool down.
I think things are a little different tonight. I'm gonna be your esteemed host tonight. As you can see, there's another guy who's wearing a robe. I think he's on a safari or something. I think he borrowed that robe from a certain lady or a lady friend. He's starting an OnlyFans page, so click subscribe on his Instagram. You just swipe up, you go to his OnlyFans page, and you can see what's underneath that robe.
He's rocking the full Nacho Libre look.
Yeah, but we've got Musa back with us. He's been away for a couple of weeks. I think Musa left the tournament when France left the tournament. And then we've got Matt and Nick, the two Englishmen. What can we say? Welcome to the show. I'm glad that you guys made the show. That's the most important part. You know, I think Nick said he was going to be drunk, but he's drinking some coffee. So I think he's still hanging. And then we've got Wonga, who's changed his beanie today. Adidas has given him a sponsorship for tonight only. They're trying to
get in, Wonga. Get in.
But how you guys doing? How you guys doing? How's the hangovers? How's the mood? How's the emotions? Especially the English boys.
How's the broken hearts there, gentlemen?
The tears. What did Matt do on Thursday? He was like, "Oh, they're gonna be tears. Let's hear those tears now. Let's hear those tears verbalized."
Yeah, look,
what was that song before? It's coming home.
It's going to Rome. It's going to Rome.
How's it to Pums and Louis?
Hey guys, Sorry, guys, welcome.
Yeah,
but, yeah. Look, it was a hard game. It was heartbreaking and that, but I console myself with the fact that it was a solid performance across the whole tournament. England played fantastic football. If you'd asked me honestly if I thought we were going to get to the final before the tournament, I probably wouldn't have said yes. I think the players did themselves proud. Even on the night, it was a very evenly matched game. There were points where England could have won it. There was points where Italy could have won it outright and not needed the extra time. So I think we can be very pleased with the result. It was a fantastic experience watching England in a final. I've never gotten to do that before. I got to watch it with my sons. You know, that's something, I think I was chatting to Cello about it. That's a memory I'll always have. And I read a cool article after the fact where it's so much nicer to be sad because England lost a final that they maybe could have won than being sad just because England was shit, which is what I've normally had for a long time.
You know, you experienced that at Tottenham as well.
Exactly. So, you know, as a Spurs and England fan, I think, you know, it's nice to be supporting a side. And it's not just about the on-the-field stuff where they've proven themselves, but also the England squad, the players themselves, the whole kind of structure around them have shown themselves to be really solid people that I'm happy to associate myself with and support. And what's happened after the final with, you know, obviously some of human beings' worst characteristics being on display, and the way that the squad has responded collectively has been also just a reaffirmation of what a great bunch of guys they are. Never mind the fact that they're all incredibly talented footballers and, you know, on the field they do things that we could all only hope to dream to do. They're also just solid guys who really stand up for what is right, and they do it in such an eloquent and professional way. You know, they don't descend to name calling and slagging off. They just maintain that professionalism and that humility. And I think all in all, obviously lifting the trophy would have been amazing. And when it was confirmed, when Donnarumma saved that last penalty, it was wrenching. But at the same time, it was a fantastic journey to get to the final. And yeah, tease us all you want, but you got flags of Netherlands, Portugal and France. And I might ask, how was your final this year?
Sometimes.
Nah, I think it was easier for me because, I don't know, one would say that maybe I've got a loser's mentality, so I'm sort of used to this sort of situation.
Newcastle mentality, yeah.
I lost a playoff final to win our local Tswane League a couple of weeks ago, so I know the feeling. It's quite hard to take, but yeah, nonetheless, I think you know, them getting to a final, like Matt says, is incredible. You would like to think that maybe they can kick on and go really challenge for the World Cup next year. But, you know, how do you pick up the pieces now? I think that's going to be the biggest challenge. You know, you can get so far and then it can all fall apart. I'd like to think with this group it won't. But, yeah, unfortunately, you know, it didn't fall the way of the English. And we'll see next time. But I think in terms of a spectacle, it was quite a good game to watch. I think both teams had their chances. Both teams had their moments. But we'll dive a little bit deeper into sort of how I feel, you know, Gareth Southgate managed the game, because I didn't think it was that great, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think the outside, yo.
What is it? Was it from the outside?
No, there were a couple of questions in my mind as the game was progressing. When you saw some of the changes being made and some of the personnel coming on, it wasn't as impressive of the expectations that I was expecting from a manager who'd played with these guys, tested out a few options before the tournament, in the tournament, played a large part of that contingent, hadn't played too many minutes, and he was giving them a go in that last few kicks, which was, I think, worth criticizing his performance as a manager in this final. I think England did do very well. What the squad, they were kind of favourites coming into it, humbly favourite. That's why they were like those chats about, you know, it's coming home. There was some confidence about the talent which England was bringing to this tournament. It is probably some of the most phenomenal players in Europe this season coming to the party, you know. And, yeah, I guess it just didn't work out with the combinations and the substitutes from Southgate, in my view.
But I think exactly just what you said there. I think I spoke to Claudio yesterday, just checking on him and stuff, and then we spoke about the game. You know, you've got the bench, guys. If you compare the two benches, guys, they're incomparable. You know what I mean? I think England have a second team on the bench, whereas, especially in the attack line, whereas Italy, their bench wasn't really a wild bench. Yes, there was maybe a Locatelli on the bench. You know, that's about it. You know, on the bench, there's not really one player you can say that could actually change the game, affect the game in a way that could be for a positive way, except for Locatelli. But then England, on the other hand, they had talents like Sancho, Grealish, Cole Foden was injured. You know, and then they had Jordan Henderson, a leader. You know what I mean? And then they've got, they had Rashford as well. And then they got Calvert-Lewin, who's not even kicked the ball in the tournament, even though Kane started the tournament slowly. So I think that you need to ask questions. And I think that probably what Matt feels the tactics weren't good enough, because I think, what, in the 90 minutes, there were only two substitutions, whereas Italy made four substitutions in the 90 minutes. Cool. I think two of them were injury-enforced, but they still made two other substitutions over and above that, where they were trying to affect and change the game. So how do you guys feel about that? I know, Matt, you've been obviously complimentary, but Claudio, do you wanna share something? Wonga as well, if your mic is on.
Yeah.
I'll let you go,
Wonga, and I'll follow up. Also,
yeah, look,
I just say, before you say anything, Wonga, I just want to say, how do you know that the Euros is over? As Marcus has come back to the show. Anyway, so you're saying, Wonga.
With another second.
Look, I think like England did well, you know. And again, before I say anything, I want to say, I mean, Southgate, obviously, and I think everyone will agree that he's obviously done well to get to the final, you know. I think everyone was doubting the way he was, even myself, the way he approached the matches. Not a fan of it, but it did the job. But now he gets into the final, and again, like same thing you're saying, they had many subs on the bench, many players. I mean, geez, you could have picked anyone, but I mean, those legs were tired. You could see it. I felt England could have won the game in the first 20 minutes. That was the opportunity to win the game. Italy looked like they were slow to get into it. And then they, you know, it, and then, I mean, as soon as, I mean, Italy got used to the occasion, they got into it and they looked pretty much in it. Not that they were dominating England, but they looked pretty much in it. Southgate, again, the thing I will question it. I don't know if we, but I mean, we'll question the way he did his, I mean, the subs to the, towards the end, like that thing of taking off, what's his name, putting on Henderson and taking him off. Just before, I mean, a penalty kick, take, you know, like I, the things like that, I can't wrap my head around how would you do something like that. But I think the most painful thing for me was, yeah, I wanted England to lose, but yo, and then when Sako was taking that last penalty, I was like, oh my God. Like, I was in mixed emotions there. Like, I wanted the guy to score.
They're trying to destroy your Arsenal gym there. That's what they were trying to do.
Yeah, right.
Breaking before you become a star. But,
shout out to Mr. Arjun in the building.
Arjun. Arjun.
Claudio, what do you want to add to...
That was me, that was heartbreak.
What do you want to add to what Wanga just said there?
I think it's based on everything that Matt was positively saying about Southgate as to everything he was doing right, playing for the result. And to be fair, it got him to the final. But at the end, I think he got caught up in playing for the result and he didn't know how to be responsive as opposed to reactive. I think it is one of those scenarios where he found himself, you know, too good to be true. 2 minutes, 1-0 up. A lot of finals are won by one goal. So naturally, as a player, when you go through something like this, it's natural. As soon as you go up and you defend what you have, you tend to forget how to play. And I think it is one of the issues that England were facing where, I mean, every time they were getting the ball, they were just hoofing it because they were protecting what they had as opposed to actually playing. And that came down to the point where Mancini was the difference in the game, where at halftime he regrouped. Because first half, let's face it, England were comfortable. I've never seen an English side look so comfortable on the ball. They were actually looking like a bunch of, you know, theoretically speaking, when you say the style of play, Kane was taking fancy touches, Phillips was taking fancy touches. They looked like resilient playing on the park. The first 45 minutes, I'd say it was all theirs. And second half, Mancini came out. He made the right decisions. And then all of a sudden, Gareth Southgate didn't know what to do. And it was change of formation maybe as well, because they got the benefits of having attacking four fullbacks. They had that benefit. And then what happens is when you've got attacking fullbacks and now you're going defensive, all of a sudden you lose an extra attacking impetus because now you're doubling down on the defense. So Kane was completely isolated. So in the first half, his strength was coming short, which is fantastic. But then second half, he was coming short for nothing because there's no one to play with him. So that's where you go, Henderson. What does Henderson do? Energy. He's got players like Saka, like Sterling, like Grealish. These players that are quick, can get in behind defenses, good on counterattacks. That's maybe where he should look at, possibly made a change in my opinion. Probably would have been a different result at the end of the day.
I think also, just in my opinion, I probably wouldn't have put Saka on just based on this tournament, looking at his sort of record. When he comes off the bench, he doesn't add much. You know, he was completely out the game. And I think it's maybe unfair to maybe judge him on that second half performance because, you know, England were just sitting in and hoping they could possibly come away with a clean sheet in that second half. But he was not effective at all. Every time he got the ball, he lost it. And I think the only chance he really had is when he nearly got clotheslined by Chiellini on the line. I mean, I think he would have probably been more effective starting. I thought Mount was a big disappointment in the game.
Oh, man, the biggest disappointment. How did he finish the game? How did he play over 90 minutes?
I thought Calvin Phillips and Rice grew into the game, but it sort of looked like the occasion got to them. I agree with Pums. I would have maybe even, I don't know, it's probably hard to say start Henderson, but maybe bring him in to sort of solidify, because he came in a little bit too late because his first couple of touches were poor. He was giving the ball away. And then we get into the second half, into extra time. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, Jack Grealish changes the game. And I think the pendulum sort of swings in extra time, and England looked like they might go on and get something. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, 15 minutes into extra time, at half time of extra time, I'm saying, you know, why couldn't Grealish come on with, you know, when we conceded the first goal? And, you know, maybe take it back to them, because they were defending for their lives in the end. And, you know, I just felt it was rather negative with the players like Sancho, like, Saka, like Grealish on the bench, Calvert-Lewin. You know, England needed to give themselves more credit in the end, in my opinion, because man for man, they're probably a better team than Italy. I think man for man, they're probably a better team.
They can't compete, really.
I think they just left it too late. I thought it was probably a little bit too negative. And I think, you know, just reading, you know, some of the decisions Southgate made, from what I understand now, Grealish has come out and said the decisions were made for penalty takers by Southgate and his management. And I think it is absolutely ridiculous how you can put a Sancho on, who's probably hardly touched the ball, a Rashford
get him to take one,
and then
get him to take one.
Then you put Saka, who's never taken an internet, who's never taken a professional penalty. You know, I'm asking myself the question: where's Sterling? Where's John Stones? Where's why isn't Henderson flipping? If I'm the captain of Liverpool and a leader in the England team, I'm saying to
won the Champions League,
leave me on the field.
He's missed every penalty he's taken for England. Henderson's missed every penalty he's taken for England. His head would not be there.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't think so. My personal feeling of penalties. I know it might be a dig at Henderson, whatever the situation. I don't care who the player is. My personal thing is of penalties. I think Rashford's come out and he said it. He said he'll always step up to take a penalty, but he didn't feel right at the moment in time. And fair enough, you only had two touches on the ball. My thing is, when I was a player, if you asked me to take a penalty, I'd be the first one there to take a penalty, regardless of the feeling. But all those things add up in terms of how you play the game and moving forward. That feeling's got to be right. And now it becomes a bit difficult when the manager goes, okay, on paper before, I've agreed with Mossa, Nick, so-and-so to take penalties. But if you can see one or two of these players are struggling in the game, to ask them to then go take a penalty makes zero sense. And you've got a player like Edison, who is a leader on and off the pitch. Yeah. So even if he does miss, your chances and probability are probably higher.
Yeah, and also, you know, he can take it on better if he misses.
Yeah.
I think he's up. He's above the age of 25. He's got more than 50 caps. Sterling has got 63 caps.
That's the thing. Let's not even talk about Henderson. Let's say he was off the pitch. Let's say Henderson didn't even come onto the pitch. You've got Sterling. You've got Luke Shaw, who arguably for me was one of the best players in the tournament.
Yes.
An absolute technician. He absolutely wallops that goal into the bottom of the net in the first 2 minutes. His confidence should be absolutely booming. You know, I'm just mind boggled. I mean, even a Calvin Phillips, he's a technician himself. Yeah. You know, I'm thinking here, you know, why are not the big names stepping up and saying, hey, you know, for me as a coach, I normally go when it's a penalty shootout, I say to the players, who wants it? And generally you get five to seven players.
Someone's saying like this,
Now, my rule is I'll get the five to seven players and I'll pick the order from there. Okay, so I'm not going to ever force a player to take a penalty. But you get, you're telling me John Stones didn't want a penalty. He's a leader at the back. You're telling me Sterling didn't want a penalty. And if they didn't, Matt, and I'm speaking as an England fan, shame on them. Shame on them, because those guys are experienced players, and when it matters most, they need to step up. And for me, I'm a little bit disappointed, you know, blame shouldn't be on Saka. I'm disappointed in Rashford and Sancho, how they took their penalties. Don't dance up to the ball. Respect the game. You know, don't dance. He's doing a Pogba / Ronaldo / I don't know what he's doing.
Rashford has been taking penalties like that for the last 18 months, and he's and Rashford has a 90%. He's only missed two penalties. He scored 16.
He doesn't do that.
But in the last 18 months, he's done that. Yes. 2 years ago, he wasn't doing that when we played in the Champions League, whatever. But in the Europa League final, he did it the same way and he scored. Friendly match that England played before the World Cup, before the Euros, he scored. So two penalties that he did previously.
But here's the difference. Not the pressure. That's not the difference. The difference is the goalkeeper, who's got a record of a 40% plus 40% of saving record. This is a keeper. When you're looking at penalties, there are two thoughts that go in with penalties. There are the keepers that go, it's a 50-50 and I'm going to choose a side and hope for the best. And then you've got the actual goalkeeper who knows what he's doing and he waits for the body language and reads the body language. The saves that he pulled, Rashford misses that penalty because Donnarumma stands still and waits for him to make up his mind, and he has to change his mind last minute. The Saka penalty is missed because he reads his body language. Sancho misses his penalty because he does the little slow run-up, completely revealing where his body language goes again. So I know there's all the data and there's all these statistics as to what's right and what's wrong when you're taking penalties. first and foremost, as a goalkeeper, if you can do that, you've got your foot up. You've got, and the man's imposing in goals. Let's not forget that. And also,
it's an absolute,
I think Musa remember this even. You remember Nicholas Anelka, Champions League, was Champions League final.
Yeah.
They put him on from the bench, and he missed. People went to him and they asked him. But they asked him, and he says, "Look, you know, he came cold off the bench, and now they expected him to take a penalty, you know." For me, I think most of it, like, as guys who played soccer before, you know, I mean, if you come in, think about it, you touch the ball as you get on the field. Twice. That's when you touch the ball, like when you come before warm up. 120 minutes you're sitting on the bench, and they put you on. You're hard. In fact, you haven't touched the ball. You haven't taken a shot the whole tournament.
Yeah.
And there you are. The kick you have to take.
Look,
is a penalty.
Think Kawonga. I agree. I agree with that. Okay. Maybe they should have been brought on. But for me, Harry Maguire and Harry Kane showed exactly how you step up in a final and you fucking put the ball away. You know, if Rashford goes and absolutely belts that and Donnarumma saves it, he's not going to get grief from people that understand football. But for me, you know, I don't think Rashford and Sancho need to do that.
They've taken it. That's the reason they've done it like that. Like Silo was saying, they've literally, that's exactly how he takes the penalty. He's not going to change it there. This is exactly how he takes the penalty.
Yeah, but I think also focusing too hard on the penalties overlooks the fact that, and I mean, Selo, I was saying to you, I was saying all along we shouldn't be letting this game go to penalties. I didn't like
exactly.
our odds. Guys, Donnarumma, he looks too good.
Five out of five penalty shootouts. That is fifth penalty shootout out of five. He's never lost a penalty shootout. How can you go against the guy who's never lost a penalty shootout?
I think he had to win it in regular time.
And you know what's scary?
He saved 13. Out of, I think, 32 in Serie A. I mean, that's his record for penalties.
Yeah, and look,
you know this, stepping up, you're going to shit yourself.
196. Look what Pums is saying. You know, he's enormous. But, you know, if we look at, and Matt, Pickford did his job. Pickford actually did his job. You know, you saved two penalties.
That's normally enough to win.
Yeah.
That's enough to win the shootout. So, it's a hard... that's why it's such a bitter pill to swallow. And you're right. Going in against... You know, having Pickford versus Donnarumma, I wasn't confident at all. And then soon as we save Jorginho's penalty, I'm thinking, here we go, we've got a chance. And the young boy goes in, shame. You know, if he hits it, if Donnarumma dives to the other side, we're not talking about that. But, you know, I think the management in that sense could have been a little bit more,
strategic with their selections.
And a little bit more experience from Southgate.
Sterling should have been number five. Sterling should have been number five.
But I want to know.
He's got a horrible penalty record.
But it's also one of those things. It experience, guys. I think the strategy. Can I just go a little bit?
Sorry, sir.
They showed a video, guys, where they showed a video from 2016 Euros, guys, where it was a knockout stage game. I think it was Portugal against some, I don't know which team.
Spain.
No, it wasn't Spain. Claudio was one. I was like, I think it was Switzerland or something, but it wasn't Spain.
It was
another of these maybe like 20th ranked European nations. So Ronaldo goes up to João Moutinho and he says, "Hey, come here.
You must take one. Yeah."
And he says, "No." It's like, "No, it's okay. If you miss, it's okay. But you must take one. You know." And that is leadership to say you are a senior player, João Moutinho. You got 50 caps plus. You must take one, not waiting for the other kids. Maybe just play like five caps or whatever. Sterling must be saying, "Guys, I'm taking a penalty. I'm a senior player. I can have the weight on my shoulders. I miss. I can at least handle the disappointment of missing." But Saka's 19 years old, guys. Rashford, what do you think, Matt? I can understand taking penalty because he's obviously a bit older than other people.
I've watched all kinds of England players miss penalties. You know, experienced, inexperienced, like, you know, Stuart Pearce missed one, David Beckham's missed one, like Southgate himself, all different kinds of levels, different positions on the field. Everyone's missed penalties. And it's one of those things where I'm sure if they did it again now, they'd do something differently. They'd all place it, you know, they might have a different order of it, whatever. The point is that in the moment, you're in there in the field, they've got to have an approach. There's been a lot of stuff written about penalty shootouts. It's hugely psychological. It's hugely up for kind of the last little minute. He is indeed actually looking very good. It's not just because he made a choice. He was like, I'm going to go on the show. I'm going to go on the show. And I'm going to have a sling on. But more than that, I'm going to also wear the animal print robe.
And you can't forget the blue light.
And the moustache. He's just, this is sort of backstage in a 70s porn, basically.
How do I change this line?
Matt, you were saying before.
So, I mean, it's hugely psychological, and you can't imagine what they're going through at the time, and they probably had a system that they agreed upon before. And remember, it's like we were saying about the Denmark-Finland game, where we said they should never have gone ahead, but when you're in that emotional moment, the players are obviously all going to say yeah. And then, so before they go to the game, they would have agreed upon the system. And from what I read, they'd been keeping kind of a little league table of all the penalty takers during practice. And that kind of set the order. And they all agreed that that was how they were going to do it. So then when you're there on the field, you're amped up. It's the final. There's 60,000 fans. Of course, you're going to say, we'll stick to the plan. No one's going to put their hand up and go, wait, guys, I don't think this is right anymore. Because they got to that point following the plan. And especially Southgate plans every... Because the way he approaches, you can see he plans every outcome. So you can't place it on them to say, because if this had worked, we'd be hailing him as a genius, you know? But I think the mistake was they never should have let it go to penalties in the first place. I didn't like us in a penalty shootout against Italy on Sunday. It just didn't look. And we had our chances. And football's about those moments. There was those little moments where there was that moment where Kane had put a cross in, and if Sterling had been like 1 foot forward, he would have reached it, and then that might have ended the game. Similarly, Italy had their chances. There was that Chiesa shot where Pickford pulled off a save that none of us thought he could make. And I think that's the thing about finals. It's a knife edge. It's such a balance. And I think, you know,
I've got a conspiracy that I need to throw in. You know, every episode I've got one. Here's Savannah saying, you know, imagine being 19 and having the winning goal behind your name would be huge. You know, almost worth the risk. I kind of feel like Arteta phoned Gareth Southgate and said, listen, bro, make Saka take the last penalty. Let him miss so we can keep on team for another season.
You know, I agree with Matt, but I would love to know, you know, you did say there was a plan. But I'd love to know, because in the moment, you know, you plan for penalties, but you don't plan for penalties, because it's very different training for penalties at St. George's Park. And then you get into a full stadium and then it's really real now. And I would suspect that, you know, you ask the players, you know, how you feeling, because if, you know, say for example, one of the players was at fault for conceding the goal that they conceded. Say it was an absolute blunder. You know, they might not be in the right mindset, even if they are a penalty taker. Say it's Harry Maguire, who absolutely does a howler. So you're gonna ask the players, you know, how are you feeling? Like, do you want it? And I just can't understand how some of those senior players wouldn't have put their hand up and would have trumped a sucker. You know,
especially if during the game they were presenting the good touches. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. During the game, the players had pumped up. They've gotten their touches in. They've gotten their eyes in. They'd be, you know, more excited for the opportunity to take the penalty in those settings. Whereas players that have been fringe, first of all, and then come on as late subs are taking the penalties. It just, it's not organic, and it's not like, it's for me, it's a point of criticizing how that arrangement happened.
Claudio, do you remember we went to USA at TUT in 2013? We played TUT in the semifinals.
Yeah.
I think we went to extra time, and then Dean came on. Remember Dean Wilkinson? He hadn't kicked the ball the whole tournament. He was injured. He had a groin injury, and he came on to take a penalty, and he scored 3 points over the rugby poles. And then we lost. Exactly. We were knocked out. It was exactly that moment. And then, you remember Dean. So if anyone wants to know, like, Dean is like the most plastic guy, and he just looks at me, and he's like, well, what the fuck do you expect from me?
I just got you. And that's one of those cases where, like, if players, they haven't been getting the confidence built from being under the coach's kind of, like, wing, and then they get to the field, and in the game, they are good, but they're not at the general tempo, general pace. You can kind of see those nuances in players. It affects their confidence, and going into a penalty, you can see when players are confident about their abilities on a penalty. They'll make sure that it's emphatic.
as opposed to kind of like being dilly-dallying about it or second guessing their kind of movements, which is what I think was the problem over the weekend.
But Matt, would you not have liked to have seen Jadon Sancho and Rashford actually have a go for 20 minutes and see what they could do? Against a very old defense. It's the oldest defense in the tournament. You know, after 110 minutes, you know, you'd think 105 minutes, you'd think, you know, a fresh Rashford and then Jadon Sancho with a Sterling, with a Grealish, you know, they could have maybe won it before. You know?
Did you see Morata's goal?
That's what we needed. I was saying we needed to make subs.
What a tough question,
Morata.
And I've got a conspiracy. I've got another conspiracy. We would have won the game.
Yeah.
122 minutes, Jorginho should have been sent off.
That was disgusting. What's the point of VAR? They can't do that. No ways. And the funny thing is, Nick, everyone on the spot, every time they played it over and over like 5-6 times. And every time it just confirmed. Okay, so get off, but no one's made the decision.
Grealish showed him his leg because I think he had studs down his thigh.
But as we said,
in technology we trust.
But like, that's another point to bring up the net. But see now, if we're watching that as fans now, and they're also seeing it, why can't they say, "Hey ref, roll that back"? Because Grealish is on the floor. I just can't understand how this thing works.
I can't help think that it wouldn't have probably made a difference because it was only about seven, eight minutes left. I was so enraged. I was like, "He's fucking dirty Italians."
Genius like that. That's the thing.
And then Chiellini, after what Chiellini did, I was like, "Oh man, I was living."
Bro, hey, come on, Chiellini. That is the dark arts to perfection. You don't.
Dark arts are supposed to be subtle. He grabbed the man by the neck and threw him on the floor. I'm sorry. The dark arts are supposed to be
subtle.
That looks like a foul, but maybe not. Was it just a good tackle? I can't tell. That's the dark arts to be. Not grabbing a man by the neck and then throwing him on the floor, and then you're like, "Oh, wow, he's a master." What the hell? Anyone could do that. I could grab a kid by the neck and throw him on the floor.
Yeah. It's funny because your tackling's You remember the time when Tunisia World Cup, he stopped the ball against Ghana. And he called him a devil.
I think it was even at the back of him biting somebody in the league, and then he came to this tournament, and then
where
he's ended up.
Tell me, you guys, Claudio and Bosa, you guys played in defense.
Not by choice.
You're half decent at right back. A little bit better than a donkey, but
I appreciate that.
No, but if you guys defending corners, you know, I've had this debate with other coaches, and you know, it's quite a modern thing to only have one player on the post. If England have someone at the back post there, they don't concede that goal. I just don't understand why, because if you set up yourself in a way, even if you're man marking, you will have enough players to cover both areas. I just think it's just, you know, you're putting yourself under unnecessary pressure, and so many goals are scored because the player is not on the post.
And not even just so many goals. If you look at this tournament, I was saying exactly the same thing. I just don't understand how the game can change so much from the 90s to now that all of a sudden there's look, I'm twofold, because when I used to defend, obviously they made me defend, but I always saw defending a corner as a huge advantage attacking the opponent because they're committing a lot of players. So I would always be the first one gambling on that second ball and trying to break forward. So I get that aspect. But if you've got other players who aren't inclined, they're not inclined to do that, have them on the post for crying in a bucket. Yeah. I don't understand why. The keeper can then have the support that he needs, and those sort of situations get cleared off the line. In that case, Kane is obviously too slow to react. But Chiellini Benucci?
No, it was Benucci.
They look the same to me. It's the head. But anyway, he gets there first because he's got the track. But they both got that weird shaped head. Anyway, doesn't matter.
I think you should.
I mean, if you're only looking at the top of their head, it is going to be hard to tell them apart. But if you look at their face,
it's quite different. But yeah, I think regarding that, like, I'd have to consider how England came into that game, thinking, you know, could they use those corners as opportunities to go for a counter? Because they could hit them at pace in those moments. And England in set pieces are also very, very good. You know, they're very well structured. They can use them to their advantage quite well. So probably coming into it, they saw it's a tournament. Do we take the risk or not? And potentially it didn't pay out for them in that scenario, you know?
Yeah, I got to say that conceded goal, it felt like a very England goal. I mean, Nick, I'm sure you felt it too. There was a period of pressure. It was after the, what was that chap's name, Berardi or whatever, when he got he came on at about the 50th minute or 55 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then for about, for sort of 15, 20 minutes after that, they really controlled the midfield well. He was creating a lot of space for Verratti to run off onto, and you could feel that pressure growing. And it was at that point England needed to make a substitution. We missed that window, and as a result, they brought themselves back into the game. And that goal, which, because it's one of those that you watch and you think there was probably three or four opportunities where someone could have cleared it, someone could have put a body in the way or whatever. It's a very England goal. And again, you saw England kind of rejig themselves, and they did kind of get themselves back on form, and they kind of, and they brought us back in the game, but it wasn't quite enough to get us over the line. And I think, for all the criticisms that Southgate will get, and I don't think he played this tournament perfectly, there were individual mistakes he made. We should also remember, no other England manager has won as many knockout games as him in the history of England playing tournaments. I don't think any other manager could reasonably have said, if you look at where we were, 2016, getting knocked out by Iceland in the second round, I don't think there's a lot of managers who could have taken us from there to where we are now, losing finalists. And I think he'll learn from this. He'll probably change his approach. But I am kind of confident that the England side overall has showed massive improvement, not only just over this tournament, but over the kind of the preceding couple of years. And I think in that way, it's hugely exciting. There's always going to be that frailty throughout this tournament. There's been instances where we have shown our defensive weaknesses. Like there's been the Germany game where Werner was through that little brain fart where he was there against Denmark. There was a couple of opportunities where they could have put the game away. So there's been moments throughout the tournament where we've shown our weaknesses, but we've also shown huge resilience in a way that no England side has. And I think that's, for me, that's the biggest kind of exciting thing. It was a hugely disappointing game. All of yesterday was very depressing. You know, I'm not going to make Italian food for a while. My wife suggested pasta. I did nachos instead. Mexican.
Just think it to you one more time.
I had pasta today to celebrate. I had pasta today to celebrate. And I was thinking, I was like, oh, yes, bacon carbonara.
I'm never ordering pizza that doesn't have pineapple on again. It's done.
But, man, you mentioned a word, that resilience. I have to put my hand up and say I was very, very impressed, and I'd give the tournament to Italy for the kind of resilience they showed throughout this tournament. As soon as they landed in this tournament, they kind of look like one of those teams that are pretty aggressive about how they come out. If they're not scoring first, they can concede, but will still come at it, still talk away. And seeing them win it in that fashion, you know, when you concede an early goal, it can really sway the balance quite aggressively, especially when you're an outfit like Italy that defends well, that kind of holds position well. Now they had to express themselves and had to come to the game, right? They had to get a goal or two and actually attack this team. And they managed to do that very, very well. First off, it wasn't ticking as best as they could. They had to change that gear from being that a team which sits a little bit more to being a team which goes forward. Second off, the changes that Mancini made were perfect to actually give them more energy in terms of trying to destabilize England, given that they were tiring already at that point. And Verratti could then climb into ascendancy in terms of his control, his positioning, his kind of positions on the ball. It really made Chiesa even coming on to show the energy and the impetus from their side. It really showed that they were a resilient team, that if they weren't facing England and were facing a team like France or Germany and the likes, I think they would have still came about the game in the same manner, where they are resilient and can come out with the result over this tournament.
I mean, if you look at it, guys, if you look at it, you know, call a spade, Italy had the hard route to the final and they still won it. England had a very favorable way through to the final. and came up short. I mean, probably the two best teams are probably in the final, but, you know, if you had to look at it on paper, they had to beat better teams, you know, if we're going to...
The whole way through.
Hey, Ryan's back.
Yeah.
Ryan, Matt's got a new mate, yeah, Ryan, another Spurs fan. Another Spurs fan. For one day, yeah, just so nice. This Benunu lifts the trophy.
Yeah. What I would say, guys, what are your thoughts, you know, it's probably a positive for a lot of these teams that have done well, that if you actually look at it, there's only really a season and a bit between tournaments. So I mean, England can pretty much keep their squad together, maybe add one or two players or if guys have a good season. But I think for the likes of Italy and England, you know, it might be a good thing that a tournament's around the corner and, you know, they can continue the momentum. But it might give the likes of, you know, your teams that underperformed, you know, less of a chance to sort of fix their wrongdoings. Yeah.
Croatia would be one of those teams that need to fix everything at the moment in terms of how they come about.
Yeah, but they're aging, bro. What are you meant to do in a year? I think, like, within the next year, I think that's a valid point. And where to next for England is, like, sure, they've done well, and you've mentioned everything Gareth Southgate has done. Yeah, but you can't change much, and I don't see Gareth Southgate changing his approach that much. So the question for me to the English fans, I mean, we know what the Italians have done it. They've been successful now, and they're not going to change. They've been playing on this sort of way for years, and it's brought them success. But for England and Gareth Southgate, and how fickle English media can be, where do
they... It's coming home.
Yeah, but I'm saying, do they back the man into another year? I mean, I suppose there's no need to change him now, but what happens when you get the same sort of result? Because you've got great players. You know, that's
why We've seen these golden generation questions come up. You know, most recently it's been Belgium, who have now probably missed their last chance to it's a huge shame, because it's one of those things where look at the collection of players that they had and they didn't quite get it over the line. And a similar thing happened to Portugal pre-Ronaldo, when they had Figo and Rui Costa and all of those guys. A lot of expectation there. England have had a golden generation every few years because of marketing. And I think that kind of... There will be that pressure. It'll be a different kind of pressure, because you look at 2018, no one expected England to do well. They overperformed. This time round, there was an expectation that they would do well, but I don't think a lot of people saw them as favourites. And then they definitely overperformed again. Going into Qatar, they are going to be talked about as one of the favourites. It'll be a different kind of pressure. And we saw that for Belgium, that proved too much. Being the title of favourites, they could never quite stand up to it. And I think there is going to be a huge amount of pressure on the England team to evolve the way they play to go into a tournament as favourites. I don't think we should change the management or anything. I think that Gareth Southgate is the right guy to do it. I will think he'll need to change his approach. I think he'll have to be... I think, like Nick said, they need to back themselves more. They need to have more faith in their own abilities and have faith. And I think what will help is another season of the likes of Foden and Saka playing... Because remember, this was Foden's breakout season. You know, he's Saka. Yeah, so another season of them being more... Calvin Phillips was a myth. For me, he's... I think Pum's asked the question, who was player of the tournament? For me, Phillips is England's player of the tournament. Absolutely immense. I wouldn't have put him... outside of Leeds, not many people would have put him in the starting 11 before the tournament. You can have this one, you know. You don't do a lot right in that part of the world, but you got Phillips right. But he was huge. His performance across the tournament, he was consistent. He was always in the right place. He didn't get overawed. There was one or two games where you saw he was sort of slightly intimidated right at the beginning, and then he just kind of walked it off. Proper Yorkshireman, just did the job. And I think that ability to build around that core spine of players, you know, you look at Pickford, Stones, Maguire, Rice, Phillips, Kane, Sterling, those players are still going to be playing in 2022. And then what you've got is the ability to change up all around them to suit whatever game you're playing. And I think that is a huge advantage, but it's no guarantee. We've seen it time and time again. The favourites have not been doing well. France, Belgium, all these teams who we expected to go far. And I think England will have a lot to... this will be kind of a huge test for their ability to evolve as a side. But it's also massively exciting. It's fantastic to be looking at an England side and thinking... instead of thinking, I hope we don't do that shit again, being able to think, we could really push on, we could do even more, I could have more nights like that, you know, and I think that's fantastic.
I mean, it's going to be a tough ask. You know, you do add the likes of your Brazils and Argentinas to the mix, it and potentially Bafana. You know, we might spill the party.
Yeah, Bafana.
but it becomes a tougher ask in that sense. But you know, I agree with you. You know, another season under their belts for the younger players in the squad, and then maybe a little bit more experience for the others. You know. You know, it's going to be another tough season for them. And I think there's an opportunity for England to go out for every game that they play up until the World Cup as a chance to sort of get the right combination. You know, you're not waiting 2 years now for a tournament. You know, by the time March comes, they would have qualified for the World Cup. I think that's when it has to be done. And, you know, there's an opportunity there for them to really go out and properly put out teams, not experiment here and there where you've got completely different teams week in, week out every time they play. They can actually go with the squads that they've got already and the combinations that they've got and actually, you know, maybe hopefully be a little bit more expansive and take games to teams instead of, you know, sitting a little bit more or sitting a little bit deep at times and being a bit more pragmatic. So, yeah, it's going to be quite exciting for them, I'd say. But like I think I saw a comment there, I think your likes of France and Germany and Spain and Portugal are going to want to rectify, and they're going to fix a lot of things, and they're going to be challenging. Let's not be fooled. And then, like I said, you add an Argentina to the mix, a Colombia to the mix, a Brazil to the mix. It's going to be interesting to see.
And Argentina are going to be gunning for it. You know, I think, you know, we've forgotten that Sunday morning Messi broke his international duck, so he's going to be looking at 2022.
I thought you were going to be leading with that.
No,
you got Matt doing the introduction. No, I thought that was your cue.
I'm setting it up.
I'm going to talk about team of the day.
Slam dunk.
let's talk about that, guys. Let's talk about that. Yes. They did it. Yes.
He had the shirt on, but you had to push it up for him. I don't know. Yes. What's going on here?
You know, sometimes the pressure of a big night gets to you, and you need somebody else just to see you up, you know? And that's what I'm saying.
So can we settle this?
I'm surprised, yeah.
The GOAT is... Lionel Messi.
Oh, sorry, but I said it before everyone, so it counts.
No, man. But listen, guys, I woke up. I woke up for all of these debates. Yeah, you're saying, Matt, what you say all these debates
about Leo debate. It's such a silly one. Like,
Cristiano.
Why do we have to, like? It's so like my son is 7 and he's always asking me who's the best player in the world. I'm like, and I tell him you can't really answer that for definite. And
no,
he's
you
like,
can, Matt. You can. Your son's says. Portuguese. No, your son's Portuguese. Ronaldo. There's one answer. What's wrong with you?
He's Portuguese. He's Portuguese and he's English and he supports Spurs. So why isn't Kane in that debate? Come on.
No.
Oh, but I don't know how many of you watched the game. I woke up 2 a.m. Watch the game. Very scrappy. I actually compared the two finals because obviously the one was early in the hours of Sunday. The other one was in the evening. The Brazil.
The other one had fans and the other one no fans.
The Brazil and Argentina game was like a fight, guys. Like it was like how do you like EFC versus like I don't know like soft boxing or something like that. Like just literally like it's just wild. It's just people are like kicking each other and like the tackles.
It's how you play football in Cape Town. That's exactly how football's played in Cape Town. Was, the weather's so shit, you just fight.
Like it was so bad. It was so bad. Like the fouls, there was no play wasn't really flowing that much, you know what I mean? Until obviously players were getting yellow cards. I think Fred got a yellow card with the second minute, you know, and I think it was probably like 7 yellow cards or 8 yellow cards in total. But I think in the end, like that touch of brilliance that Rodrigo De Paul made a pass to Di Maria, and Di Maria made a great finish,
what a finish.
Then Argentina did what England tried to do. They defended for the rest of the game, basically. Sure. They defended for the rest of the game, kept it compact. Otamendi was immense in the defense there. Martinez also played well. But I think if you compare the two, Brazil
for continuing to also create that onslaught, like Gabi and Neymar continuing.
Exactly.
So, well, to actually go for Argentina.
Yeah.
They were trying to get that goal, but I think in the end, I think the football gods were just saying, Lionel Messi, this is yours today. Nothing can happen today that you cannot win the trophy. No matter what, this is yours. And they gave it to Messi. I'm serious. Like, it was just like, it was made for him, guys. Like, you know, but yeah, I think, as you said, who is the GOAT? Claudio is Portuguese.
So I agree with what Matt said, man.
I'm completely like, unbiased.
These two players, they are just incredible, incredible. They're just special talents in so many ways. The comparison happens between them because they're just head and shoulders above everybody else. There's literally in the soccer fraternity no two other players that are even close to these guys. And it's quite crazy that they've been doing this for all of their careers, right? They're coming towards what I think is the next, the last 3 to 4 years of their careers. And they've been doing this since the day they landed on the scene, and it's crazy. The talent that they have as individuals
Ryan's
is dope.
On form. Sorry, man. Ryan, in 3 years after he wins three prems and a champ, bro, everyone will say,
let me just say, if Ryan is right and Kane does that with Spurs, then there would be no debate. If he could take Spurs to that level.
No debate in the weight household, maybe.
Like we don't. It also creates this unnecessary thing. Like, I just enjoy the football. Like it's.
Oh man. Arsenal's losing to Hibernian 2-0.
Guys.
It's a friendly. Like these things
begun. You know.
I think guys, Wonga loves. He's very good at. He's always been on the fence. I think between the Ronaldo and Messi debate. So I want to ask you, Wonga, in terms of where you sit with that, and then the next question, follow-up question being, these two guys still have at least 2-3 more years in them. Who are the next guys in the category that we should be considering as real head-turners?
Look, yeah, Ronaldo Messi, guys, I think if you're a football lover, you would appreciate the two of them. I think they're good at what they do. Messi, obviously, one-on-one. Brilliant. Ronaldo was like that, but obviously changed his game. But he gets the goals. Messi scored free kicks. You can say Messi's better than Ronaldo, hands down. Penalties, Ronaldo's better than Messi, you know. Aerial ball, Ronaldo's better than Messi. But the thing is, for me, they do what they do in their own way, but they get the job done. I think that's what's the most important thing about the two of them is they get the job done. The guys who scored them, the highest amounts of goals is the two of them. Yeah, maybe Messi's leading by a few. People say, yeah, it's a one league, whatever. But they scored the goals. You know, you can't take it away from them. I'm not saying it's wrong to have your favorite one, because I won't lie. Yes, Messi does appeal to my eye more than what Ronaldo would. But again, I can't deny when Ronaldo does extraordinary things on the field. And then guys coming into the mix now. I think there are guys potentially. I mean, Mbappe obviously would be, you know, everyone's up with that as well. Everyone's
I think it doesn't Mbappe not have Mbappe, too much hype. I think too much hype.
That's what I was going to say. Definitely. I think definitely he's overhyped.
Ronaldo was massively hyped when he was young.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I think there was a lot of excitement.
It was both.
Ronaldo is doing well in the French league as well.
Play the team so in front of him. He can't be like, you know, it's
not true.
But he chose to play.
But also, what makes Ronaldo and Messi both goats? I mean, if you can have more than one goat, which you know probably you not, can. Because why? No, greatest of all time plus one. Let me ignore the semantics. What makes him that? What puts him as the consistency? They've both been doing it. They've been doing it for so long. And in Ronaldo's case, doing it in different leagues with different teams and dragging teams along. Messi, obviously, that consistency, that delivering for Barcelona every season. Ronaldo going to all of the major leagues and winning with them. Mm. I think he's just missing Germany and France, obviously. But I think
and he can still go there.
He could. He's still. You saw him in the Euros. He's fit as fuck. He's still playing like a 19-year-old. And I think that
he was a top goal scorer.
Exactly, and that kind of consistency is what separates them. So all these other players, they're all in there with a chance, but they need to, if they're still doing what they do now in 15 years, then they're on the same level as Messi and Ronaldo, and that's not going to happen often. We might get players who have two or three seasons at their level, but it's going to be a long time before we have players who do 15 years at the level these boys have been doing.
I mean, I agree with Matt. I think it is very tough to, you know, and I think in terms of their own abilities, you know, I think they offer sort of different things, and they've both been so good at what they do. But I think it would be very unfair to leave, you know, such a special player out of the conversation. You know, unfairly left out of the Brazil squad. Probably the reason they never won the tournament.
Do you think Steve Bruce made a call? Do you think Steve Bruce made a call to complain? Yeah. Why aren't you playing my boy?
So that's why Brazil. That's why Brazil lost, is because he didn't pick.
Yeah, serves him right. Serves him right.
He's probably sitting somewhere on time, so watching that game on his telly, like, I fucking told them.
But, you know, Claudio, for I think one player that I think would come up and meet the expectation, one player I do like, I think, and I'm certain, I think he'll probably end up scoring more goals than Mbappe. I would think it's Haaland. I like the way the guy plays. Very lethal. Very direct. I just enjoy that about him. And
He was made in a test tube.
He's
not real.
I think
he was created in a lab.
I think he was risen from a Viking grave. Like, they found a sunk ship and him wrapped in cloth, and they were like,
the day his dad football. Was picked by Cantona. The day his dad was kicked by Keen, he took his genomes and he says, no, we're gonna make this perfect test tube specimen, to your point there, Matt. That's exactly what it was. But interesting that you say that, because Arjun's saying, in Dortmund's side right now, it was Sancho actually had more of an impact for Dortmund more than Haaland, assisting wise. So question being, how well will Haaland do without a Sancho around, and also how good is Sancho really, and how good do you think he's going to be at United? I think that's a key question. I don't know what everyone's thoughts are there.
I think another one.
I'm scared for him. Like, I think hopefully the situation doesn't end up with Van der Beek, similar to Van der Beek's story.
Imagine going from Dortmund to nearly winning the Euros, Musa. Imagine going from Dortmund to nearly winning the Euros. You got to the semi-finals of the Champions League, and now your new coach is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Ole Gunnar.
when he arrived for his medical today, do you think Solskjaer asked for his autograph?
Guys, I'm thinking of another player that I could consider next gen. I don't know if we can consider him next gen or current gen. If Harry Kane were to go to a team like Barcelona or Real Madrid or let's say Man City, and he does very well for
Barcelona,
the next 4 or 5
seasons. Barcelona
definitely
out of that. Sorry, more so.
10 seasons.
They can't afford anyone. But they can't
afford the players they've already got.
But let's say a big team which could enable him to win silverware and actually continue in the form and the rich vein. Or I don't even know if calling it form is correct, because he's been doing it for 4 years, you know. If he can do that at a bigger club where he gets the accolades and the trophies and the likes, I think he could be a next-gen leader for sure. If he just carries on in the same trajectory.
Like in that gap between Messi and Ronaldo and Haaland and Mbappe. Yeah. He'll be the rebound goat. You know, we've got our goat, our rebound goat, and then our long term goat.
As soon as the other two retire,
He'll keep us occupied for 3 years and before the next one shows up.
Yeah. No, look, I think that's a very valid point. I think, and he would definitely be part of that debate.
Because that's Neymar's bracket as well, 26 to 30 years old.
But I think he could do well, right, if he was to go to a Real Madrid. Never. Not Neymar, but Harry Kane. Right now, if he were to go to Real Madrid and win Champions League, or go to a Man City and win Champions League, he's back on. He's back on. He's literally like top goal scorer in the Premier League, top goal scorer in Europe type of material.
Yeah. Yo, I was reading some hectic breaking news there. I don't know if anyone's read that.
I think...
to an unknown club. That's awesome.
Well,
for
what's
you.
What's going on, man? You must defend your club.
I think Hibs are a fairly well-known club.
So, before we close off the show, obviously, I think the next focus is the league season. And I think if I could just get at least from each of you one signing your club needs to make. Not a luxury, not... not
Messi.
Like that, brother.
I'm ending the show,
guys.
What else are we supposed to do?
Selo, you didn't say realistic signing, Selo. You can't ask the question.
They don't need.
Guys.
Need.
This man.
Even Messi
If you went to any manager in the Premier League and said, "Do you need Messi?" Do you think any of them are going to go, "Nah, I'm alright, mate"? Steve Bruce will wheel out Joe Linton and be
Joe
like,
Linton,
oh,
yeah. But honestly, truly speaking, Arsenal. For me, it's a bit like, I think the other teams, like Man United, can say one. They can go for one. I think Chelsea, maybe if they wanted one, they could go for one. But if I'm Nick, Matt, I don't think one is going to solve. I think Matt, maybe one.
Arjun is right. If we keep Kane, that'll be our biggest signing. Like,
yeah.
But we won't.
But ask Arsenal, I can't say one, bro. I can say keeper, but then I've got problems with my defense. I can say a midfielder.
What if you said, what if your one signing was a new manager?
Exactly. Yeah, it could be a new manager. It could be Galasaurus.
You could have had Patrick Vieira. You could have had Patrick Vieira. And now he's going to be looking at you from across London.
I don't know.
Chucking into his sleeves about Arteta.
Wanga. Do you guys have
Amazon Prime.
No, I don't have it.
I have it.
So there's a show, I think it's called Eagles Will Dare or something like that. It's a 6-part documentary on Crystal Palace and how their club was saved by, I think it's Tony Parrish. I think that's his name. Neil Parrish or whatever. And it's quite interesting to see how the club nearly went bust in 2010 and how they've sort of brought it up. And sort of the plans initially when they've had bad ownership is to become the Arsenal of South London. So it's quite interesting because now Patrick Vieira is there. But they're probably at the same level as Arsenal now. So they just need one or two seasons.
Yeah, true.
Football tick on purpose, hectic.
No, I'm just joking. But watch it. It's quite interesting to see how close they were. Like they were close to going bust completely. Simon Jordan was a big reason for that. I don't know if you guys follow any of these the crappy talks on TalkSport. Yeah, he's an absolute arsehole.
Yeah, he thinks like shit. I don't like him, yeah.
He thinks he knows.
Why are we talking about him on our show? Listen, guys, listen to that guy. He looks like shit.
Ownership stays the same, yeah, Joe Willock, I've heard we've already inquired about him. To be honest with you, if I'm an Arsenal fan, I think I would want to try and keep him because I think he would be a new signing for them. It's probably performed better than any of your midfielders this season. Wanga.
Musa?
Do you have midfielders?
Musa?
Yeah.
There's nothing happening there. At this point in time, man, I'd just love to see another striker come into the fold at Chelsea.
Shame, man. Haven't you ruined enough strikers for us all?
No. It's only Werner who ruined it for himself and everybody else around him. But I'd just like to see another striker coming in. At this point in time, I think the rest of our squad looks solid. Looks like it's in good nick. We might lose players like Kurt Zouma, but I think we should be able to.
Would that striker replace Werner?
I would give Werner some time on the bench, as a coach. I think it'd be helpful for him because even in the national team, I don't think it's working so far with his run of form and his current it looks as if he's been stuck into a position which he's not really excelling in most teams, at center attacking forward type of position, which is, it plays to his speed, but it doesn't really work well with the runs that he creates for the team all the time. And his finishing has been atrocious this season, right? Even into the Euros. So I'd give him some time to work on that and fix that while testing out another striker. And then, yeah, that would be me from my side.
Claudio, and you?
I think you've got yours already. You got yours already. No, you got yours already. That's centre-back.
So he doesn't do the same thing to Van Dijk again.
Yeah, Konate. But I kind of forget that we've got Konate and that Gomes is coming back. But, I mean, I suppose we got the centre-back that we needed. But if we're looking more specifically, you got to say Gini leaving is going to leave a huge hole in the midfield, largely because he was always there. And I think a lot of fans have taken him for granted. Because even last season, throughout the process of the stop, start, 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 he was the permanent fixture on the list. So I think maybe finding a replacement in him is going to be difficult because, you know, hopefully Thiago is going to step up after he's found his groove a little bit. So let's see what happens. But yeah, and then you could even look further and say we need to look further and find possibly a replacement in Firmino, considering when the game's not going our way, do we have something different to bring on? So that's where you could say you need to look. But let's see. Whatever they decide, they normally have a plan, so we just have to go with it, I guess.
Okay, that's cool. Matt, you it's Kane signing a contract. Keeping Kane is your one.
Yeah, I mean, if we keep Kane, that would be fantastic. If we lose Kane, there's like Wonga, we'll need more than one. You know, we'll need another striker. Although that said, signing big strikers hasn't worked for us. It's a bit like Chelsea, you know. When before Kane kind of finally stepped up, we'd gone through Soldado and that Janssen dude, and they didn't quite make it. So maybe if we do lose Kane, we've got to put faith in Dane Scarlett and then maybe spend the money on some more solidity at the back, because it looks like we could be losing some defenders. Alderweireld apparently might be on his way out. So I think it's going to be a busy time at Spurs one way or the other. Even if it's just holding on to Kane, which would be huge.
Okay, no, that's cool. Me, it's a centre-back, Rafael Varane. Man, guys, we need a centre-back to partner Maguire. Maguire is solid, just needs a good partner, guys. You know, him and Stones were one of probably the second-best partnership in the Euros, probably the best because they considered the fewest goals. But I guess the one that won is the best. But him and Stones complemented each other quite well. Maguire is combative. He's good in the air. Stones a bit quicker. But they're both good on the ball, which helps. Those passes through into the midfield. So I think if you get Rafael Varane, that'll be a great signing, guys. I think, yeah.
Varane would give him so much more pace even at the back.
He would help him, exactly, with the pace, you know what I mean? Mm. So I think, that's what we need at Man United. So we'll see what happens. It's still 31 December, I think, is the... Sorry, 31 August, sorry. 31 August is when the transfer window closes. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, before we end of the show, guys, we had Super Brew going on, and the winner was Louis. Louis won.
well done, Louis.
Good job, Louis.
So if you want to do, if those that did partake, well done. I'm going to just do a little share here on the screen. You know, I'm the famous sharer in this place. No one shares like me. so yeah, that's the top 10. If you can see it on the screen, Dirty Purple second, Storm third, Debato fourth, Fran the man, Pum sixth, myself seventh. I don't see Claudio in the top 10, so yeah.
Where am I? 11th? I forgot. Am I 11th? 12. I forgot to make people 2 or 3 predictions.
Claudio in the 12. But yeah, and then also we've got a Epic Games giveaway. Claudio's going to announce the winner. for the
Straight into the drum roll.
And the winner of one of our packs is Dirty Purple. He's in our Discord, so, and I know where he lives, so it's easier to drop off. So congratulations, you have won a mega starting pack. Dirty Purple from
NBA.
Who's auditing this?
Who's auditing? You need the auditor.
That sounded... I don't know. Guys, convenient. If I was watching this and a dude with that mustache, with that robe on, said he knows where I live, I would not want to win any competition in relation to this. So I hope,
he's gonna have to
I hope this is not too horrific an experience for Dirty Purple.
Good luck, Dirty Purple. Let's see how dirty you are, champ.
But we still have four more packs of those Panini cards to give away from Epic Games. So just tell us, go to the comment section on our Instagram account and tell us how many you think there are to collect. And Nick gave his suggestion. Moss has given his. Moss, what was yours again? You said how many?
700 players in the
Moss
entire
Moss said 700. Zero. Nick, how many
but
did you say, Nick?
Off, huh?
I think I said 540. Yep.
540. So, yeah, so just tell us how many you think there are, and you guys can win yourself a starter pack that come with the Panini cards as well as a sticker book. And, yeah, we've still got four more of those to give away. So, yeah.
is it true? Is it true?
No, man. Christy, look at this. Christy.
Come on, Christy. Yeah. Can you believe it?
Look what he's saying here. Come on now.
Okay. What's happening? Oh, she's red. She's
I don't know. So she's just reading. Man's getting too excited.
Well done to everyone. And then, I think just a message from everyone at GLTV. I think those are within South Africa. We've seen what's been going on. In terms of the looting and the lawlessness. Let's just hope that, everyone is safe out there and that all of this can end. As you guys are speaking, I can actually hear a helicopter flying past my place. So let's hope that all of this ends and that at least everyone needs to stay safe first and foremost. And then we can sort out our vaccination rollout and so on, man. I think,
Yeah, I can register from Thursday, guys.
I'm older. 35 and above, guys. Yeah, register, guys. All the guys. Yeah, all the guys.
As the other statesman, I'll take it on behalf of all Goal Lounge, and then whenever we need to go, if you guys need to have milk collected from the shop, I'll be able to go along and do it without fear of infection.
Matt, what's winning the Euros? You didn't need to win the Euros. You're going to get your vaccine soon. It's like winning
exactly.
Winning the lottery. Well,
I actually had a plan, and I'm hoping I get to pull it off. Hopefully I'm brave enough. I actually want to tuck my one arm inside my sleeve, and then when they do the injection, I'm just going to force it out like, ah! And they'll be like, that's not my watch.
Final thoughts, guys. Final thoughts. Anything that you guys like to say? Maybe thinking about the Euros, thinking about the season ahead. Anything?
I think, for me, I think just with Southgate again. I think he's done a good job, and I think, definitely, he's shown that he's built on from his past matches and tournaments, and I think they should carry on. They should take him to the next one as well. That's my thoughts on that. And well done to Italy and Mancini.
Yeah, well done to Italy from my side. They were great over this tournament and very excited to see what they'll bring out in the World Cup. So shout out to them.
Yeah. And Italy haven't been beaten in 2 years, eh? That's good for them. Jeez.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I think leading up to the final, I would have been happy with either winner. I think at the end, probably be based on the results. Italy then obviously... Italy deserves it.
Inevitably.
I just want to drum home the sort of the message with regards to currently what's happening within South Africa. Some crazy things happening. Just want to say again, just reiterate the fact from Goal Lounge TV, people be safe, stay at home, And let's not get carried away and stealing shit from other people, because that's not what we do. All right? And then, yeah, I think that's from my side. Oh, yep. One last thing. Okay. And Arjun, all the strength, my man. All the strength.
Yeah, hang in there, Arjun. You need to see jersey number 7, man. Jadon Sancho 7, Old Trafford against Leeds. 3-1 scoreline. Come on. You need to be there, man. Come on.
Man United losing 3-1.
Coach Nick, when is Varsity Cup starting?
It's been pushed back. We started in September, but yeah, I've just started pre-season now with Amatux, so we actually have a friendly with another NFD team on Friday. Okay. So yeah, it's quite exciting. Putting the boys through
the paces. You guys lost some players. Didn't you lose a player to TS Galaxy, I think?
We lost a player to Sundowns and Baroka.
Okay, Baroka, that's the one, yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying it on this platform, but that's probably good riddance in my opinion. Not good for the change. Claudio knows what I'm talking about.
Hey, coach, this is recorded. It's recorded, coach.
I don't care. I'm the coach. They're going to have to ask me for a job soon. So, yeah. It's all right.
Tell them. Good riddance, champ.
Thanks, coach.
Nothing substitutes a good attitude. If you don't have a good attitude, you have no chance in my team. And I think that's how it should be.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah, me too.
Matty, anything? Last words?
It's been a wild year for football, you know. I mean, I was chatting about it after the Sunday's game. No other sport gets me this worked up. I watch a lot of sport. Only football does this to me. I probably need to take a break from it because I am old enough to get my vaccine, which means I need to be careful with my heart. So I'm probably going to take a bit of a football break so that I'm ready for next season. But, you know, I'm already starting to get excited again, so bring it on. I love this game, man. It's too good.
That's good. My last word is all the best to Kaizer Chiefs. CAF Champions League on Saturday. Let's bring it home, guys. Let's bring it home, guys. If there's anything, guys, let's bring it home. I'll sacrifice. There's a lot I can sacrifice for that win, man. I'll sacrifice a lot.
But, guys, don't why... learn from this bring it home chat. Hey, bro. They're not scared. They're bring it home.
It's not a song. But yeah, if you don't know what to
be cool.
Thanks, cheers. thanks for tuning in, guys. Cheers,
guys.
Cheers, people.